There's a way, a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.
This is Rod Adams, and it's time for another Atomic Show. I'm excited to have a guest today from the uranium mining industry. We have talked a lot about nuclear over the years, and we have never, or maybe sometime in the distant past, talked about how these great power sources actually get fuel. So Lee Currier is the CEO of a company called NexGen, which is developing an amazingly abundant resource in Canada, in the province of Saskatchewan. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Rod.
All right, Lee, I want to start with you telling us a little bit about you and how you got into the business of hard rock mining.
Sure. Thanks, Rod. Well, it dates back to 2002. I started as a chief financial officer for a small uranium project in South Australia, where I'm originally from. And I went through the feasibility and permitting of that project before we sold it. But in doing so, I had a real deep search right around the globe to understand what the state of uranium mine supply was from a economic, technical and sovereign jurisdiction profile, because as you could appreciate, the location of where uranium is mined is highly important with respect to, you know, providing security or assurance to the end users that that fuel will be available. From that, go forward to 2011. I founded NexGen Energy with a real focus on the Athabasca Basin located in Saskatchewan, northern Canada, because it is the home of the world's very highest grade mines. They're very difficult to find, but they are on average about 100 times the grade of the balance of the deposits right throughout the rest of the globe. And what we did was focus on an area of the basin which was effectively on the opposite side to where the existing producing mines were located, which are on the northeast, and took the simple view that the geology was no different. We had a number of industry participants suggest that that was quite foolish. There'd be no uranium over that side of the basin. Well, on our 21st drill hole and the first drill hole on this particular target ever, we discovered the Arrow deposit, which has since become the world's largest highest grade deposit, over 100 million pounds. It's currently at 350 million pounds. And what makes it very unique is its pristine technical setting. It's an extremely competent basement rock, and it has a exceptionally clean metallurgy. And when you consider those aspects plus the grade, NexGen's Arrow deposit on the Rook I project is considered to be one of the most exciting resources projects, full stop, in the world across all commodities. And it's occurring at a time where the demand for nuclear energy is the highest it's ever been. And it's growing way faster than I'd ever anticipated back in 2011 when founding NexGen. We are on the cusp of receiving our final federal approval and getting it into construction. It'll be a four-year build. Once in production, will contribute around 22 to 25% of the world's mined supply. And that's quite incredible to think when you compare it to Saudi Arabia, which currently produces 9% of the world's oil. We will be the most dominant producer and located in Canada, which sovereign history is well known. It's directly to the north of the US, who currently consume around 50 million pounds per annum, and that figure is going up, yet they produce less than 1 million pounds domestically. So Canada, the NextGen Arrow Rook One project is going to be absolutely a key component in delivering this nuclear energy that is in very high demand and increasing demand with all the tech companies, AI data centers being built, which consume huge amounts of power.
All right, Lee,
And
let me interrupt for a second. So I want to ask, you started in the uranium business in 2002, and I bet by somewhere around 2006, 2007, you said, I got in the right business. This is great.
Yes, I did. From a commodity pricing perspective, the uranium price when I started in 2002 was $7 a pound, and then in 2006 and 2008 it hit $136 a pound. Whilst that was exciting, it was a good business. But uranium, let's go forward over the next from 2008 right through to 2022, probably
All right, so then
14.
you decided to found a uranium company in 2011. And sometime in March of 2011, the uranium market changed abruptly.
Yeah, correct. I started it in the months following March 2011. I saw it as a opportunity to incorporate NextGen, pick up a large land parcel in the Athabasca Basin, the home of the highest grade, highest tonnage deposits and best sovereign location, and set about it. But I wouldn't have termed it fun at that particular time. I was optimistic and confident, but raising money for uranium exploration at that time was incredibly challenging. And but myself and a dedicated team went about it very diligently. We were successful in raising the money, albeit a very challenging exercise. And on the discovery, those who invested in us were extremely well rewarded. Whilst Arrow is recognized as one of the best geological assets ever in across all resources, it's our responsibility to extract the uranium in a very socially conscious, environmentally conscious, and economically conscious manner. And that's how everyone at the company measures their performance.
You mentioned that the deposit is in basement rock. How deep is it from the surface?
It starts from 100 meters from surface. It is currently defined down to 920 meters. It's a vertical deposit, and it's open in every direction. And so it's still yet to be fully defined. We have mineralization in and around the Arrow deposit, which is not currently recorded on the resource estimate. Further drilling will do that. But we're already dealing with what is the world's best, and we will finalize that drilling once we're up and running in production.
You mentioned that you have some concentrations, some ore concentrate that is 100 times greater than some of the other mines in the world. What the kind of numbers are you talking about?
To put it into context, the world's average grade of production is 0.1%. U308. We have approximately about 200 million pounds at 20% average grade.
Oh,
We even
20%.
have, yeah, we even have intercepts of like 11 meters at 58%. We have a 3.5 intercept of 78% uranium. So it is, if it was on to be graphed, when you consider the size and grade, Arrow is incredibly dominant on a world scale against the other uranium deposits.
Yeah, those are numbers that I've never heard of before. It's almost like mining pure uranium. It's like going to do a gold mine and finding nuggets.
Yeah, you're quite right. Uranium is effectively at 100% at just under 80% uranium. It's effectively pure uranium. So yeah, it's an absolute geological phenom what has been discovered, and it's a real credit to everyone at NexGen and those before us at NexGen. We learn a lot from people who have been exploring the Athabasca Basin over 40 years, and so it's been a collective effort, and also the government of Saskatchewan with their geological department having exceptional database really did help and contribute to this wonderful discovery.
Now, you mentioned that it's really hard to find these kinds of deposits, and I imagine a vertical deposit would be easy to miss compared to one that's spread out horizontally. What are some of the other challenges you have when you're trying to find these kinds of deposits?
Quite right, Rod. These are effectively deposits that exist within the cracks within the ground, and fluids have washed through the cracks and then hit a trough or a dam and mineralized over millions of years. And so it's about finding the crack and then finding one of those troughs or dams within that crack below the surface. And they're not, geophysics gives you an indication, but there's no, magical key geophysically to unlocking the discovery of uranium deposits. The drill bit is the key, and the geophysics is imperfect and it's interpretive. So you can literally be skimming a hole along the side of one of these cracks, a meter away from mineralization, and not even know that you're within the vicinity of a world-class deposit. That's the difficulty. Now, we ran a very diligent exploration research, refined targets, and had very early success. But yeah, I don't want to make it oversimplified just how difficult these things are to find. They're incredibly difficult, and hence why you need lots of intelligent, well-experienced and objective mindsets to make great discoveries. Because if it's so obvious, someone else has already discovered it. And so you have to be bold, and you have to really contest common geological thought. And we did that, and rewrote geology, uranium geology, in a lot of respects.
I read a little bit about the way that you're going to develop the Rook I deposit or the Arrow deposit, and it sounded like you had some unique ways of keeping the footprint small by doing a lot of stuff underground that's not always done that way. Can you talk about that a bit?
To minimize the impact of drilling from surface, we did a number of things where we wedged and did some directional drilling. Basically, you use the same hole three times and then you branch off it. So that minimizes the disturbance at surface as much as possible. And we've done that. We have a very minimalistic view at or approach at NextGen. Anything we do, we will only impact as minimally as possible and then immediately start reclamating. Given the grade of the project, it is actually physically a very small footprint. With the proposed surface infrastructure, including the airstrip, it would fit into most sports stadiums and the surrounding car park, around the world. So it's a very small surface expression, and we have a very, minimal impact on the environment. And what we do, we immediately reclimate. So when I said before, one of our criteria is this is going to be the most well-managed mine environmentally in the world, and that is a function of its technical setting being, very competent rock and clean metallurgy, the small footprint, but also some of the design parameters. And so we are actually building underground tailings storage facilities, and the consequence of that is it does cost more, both CapEx and OPEX, but it's elite environmentally, and it avoids, at the end of mining, having a reclamation liability which can go into the hundreds of millions and for many decades. With our approach, within 3 to 5 years following the mine closing, you'll be hard pressed to know that there was ever a mine in the area. And so that is a reflection of our approach. We are elite in every aspect of our operations. It's the most sensible, and I actually think it'll start becoming the standard for mining projects around the world.
So you're even going to be milling your ore underground, is that correct?
To a degree, we'll pre-process a degree of it underground, but it'll come to surface and go through the mill, which again is a very tiny mill, given the high grade, but the low volume of rock. And then we'll be packaging it and sending it off to the converter to start the process to become nuclear fuel in the reactors. And from our mine gate to being fabricated for the fuel rods to go in the nuclear reactor, it's about a 2-year process. So there's a lot of planning involved from the utility, and the utility takes ownership once the U308 arrives at the converter. Yeah, a lot of planning. And it speaks to your earlier point, Rod. All this nuclear energy demand has to be fueled by the uranium. And so there's been quite an extensive period where there's been an underdevelopment of uranium mines. The current producing mines are coming to the end of their useful lives, and hence the need for our project is absolutely critical and present, and the world needs 2 to 3 arrows immediately, and yet they just don't exist. The price of uranium is going to be far higher in the future.
During the last dozen years or more, the world has been producing less uranium than it's been consuming. We've been drawing down inventory. Is that process near its end, or is there still large inventories left in the world?
No, there's it's near its end. The industry did have the benefit of a vast inventory buildup over the 1980s and early 1990s. But when you look at the inventory levels of the major producers, mine producers of uranium, they are all at historical low levels, and the amount of stock on hand held by the utilities is at record low levels. And we're already seeing the impact of that in the uranium price. It was, only about 5 years ago, it was about $17 a pound. Today it's at $72 a pound and increasing. The quantity of available supplies to be transacted is at or near like bare cupboard levels.
Now, the numbers you just cited, I think, are spot prices. Isn't uranium mostly traded in long-term contracts?
Yeah, it's both a combination of long-term contracts and spot prices. Historically, a lot of term contracts were at fixed prices, but that's been changing over the last 3 years. They're now more referenced to the spot price at the time of delivery. Some have floors and ceilings, others are totally exposed to spot at the time of delivery, and then there's others with no floors but very high ceilings. And so the term market is often assumed to be just a fixed price. It's not. That's changed. That's gone. That's forever. That's gone. It does have some a price certainty component to it, but the contracts NexGen's been signing are heavily weighted towards the spot price and at the time of delivery. And so we provide, complete leverage to the price of uranium in the future. Given our very high level of production certainty, that's in the interests of the utilities, but also in the interests of all of our stakeholders to ensure that they're optimizing the return on every pound produced.
So you are close enough now to getting your mine constructed and in operation that you're signing sales contracts. Is that correct?
Yes, there's We have currently £10 million under contract. We have another five negotiations at varying stages of completeness. The level of activity around the offtake negotiations has increased considerably, and we're very busy on it. I think that reflects not only the stage of NexGen's development, and utilities can see that we'll be in production in the near term, but also the demand. Current producers are having difficulties maintaining production levels. They're coming to the end of their mine lives. And so utilities see this, and they're looking to for alternative sources of supply. We're a brand new mine in a fantastic location, and we have a very high level of certainty around our production volume and costs. And our clients very much welcome that and want exposure to that.
How long will your mind last?
The current resource estimate, and as I mentioned earlier, we know it's much larger, both the measured, indicated, and inferred, it'll be approximately a 17-year ore body. As I said, we've got mineralization around that. We know it's much larger, and hence we've applied for an initial 24-year mine license. Very recently, we discovered a new area of mineralization only 3.5 kilometers due east of Arrow, along another parallel crack in the ground. And whilst we don't have a resource definition around that yet, because we're still looking to understand just its size and extent, it's no doubt that it's crossed a threshold that, subject to further permitting, would complement the mine life at Arrow. Anyone can say safely away that, given the mineralization that's known, this mine is likely to be a 30 plus year mine life. And look, we found those two amazing deposits very early on. Like, we've still got over 95% of our property to explore. It's just that we found what is the world's best on the 21st drill hole. We haven't fully explored the project at all. As I said, we've got another 95% of the area to explore. I think those facts state for themselves that the likelihood of us finding additional mineralization is very high. So I would even qualify that 30-year mine life that it's probably quite conservative and could likely be a lot more.
It sounds like some of your employees might have grandchildren working there.
Yeah, that's right. And most likely, I will no longer be standing on this planet when it closes. Which is
So
all
tell us a
good.
little bit about how you, what's the physical process of getting the ore out of the ground? Or is it done with people swinging picks and shovels, or is it done with machines, or how do you do this?
Yeah, so it's called block caving long hole stoping. But basically, you're taking blocks of ore from underground and moving them up the vertical shaft to surface. This mine will be one of the most technologically advanced mines on the planet. It'll be highly automated. We're working with some equipment suppliers to have the equipment operated remotely from surface, minimizing the number of people that are underground at all times to its absolute minimum, and ensuring that the interaction between machinery and humans are as infrequent as possible, prioritizing the safety of everyone involved. So it will be, highly mechanized, automated, and efficient as a consequence. There will be times when people do go underground, no doubt about it, but far less than what you see in the current operating mines and also those of the past.
Is it true that in some of the very high-grade uranium mines, it's actually dangerous from a radiation point of view to have people in the mine too long?
Yeah, it's in context. The ore is very high grade. The exposure levels are monitored, like people wear dosimeters, so they're constantly monitored. With all the procedures that you have in place and the practices, The radiation exposure in context to an underground worker in one of those mines over the course of the full year is less than a airline pilot that does the leg from New York to London over the course of 12 months. So in context, yes, there is radiation exposure aspects to be managed, but in context, it's less than an airline pilot who flies that leg annual on their over the course of a year.
I asked that was the leading question because I was pretty sure it was not a real problem, but I wanted to hear your response.
Yeah, pleasure.
You got this nice vertical deposit. It's going to be lasting for roughly a couple of decades. And you said you're going to supply 30%, 25% of the world's uranium demand, at least compared to what it demand is today.
That's correct.
And hopefully, from my point of view, the demand should be three or four times what it is today, sometime in the relatively near future. So,
Yeah, correct. It's incredibly exciting economically, and it is for other companies that are looking to move their projects into production. The fact is, though, if all of them get into production, it still won't be enough, and hence the consequence will be far higher uranium prices on a per pound basis, be it in the spot market or under contract.
Well, as they say in commodities, the cure for high prices is high prices, although it does take a while to get new uranium mines into production. You've been
Yeah,
working on yours for what, 12, 14 years?
that's right. That's a really good point, Rod, which I think is overlooked. Even if the price of uranium goes to $200 a pound, these mines just can't turn on. Even those that have been discovered take an enormous amount of time, 15 years plus. Like we discovered this in 2014, it's now 2025, so that's 11 years. We discovered ours in record time in terms of meters drilled and output, cost. It's in a great location, ideal technical setting, great regulatory process. We're in our 11th year. So, and the time to build the mine will be 4 years to get it into full production from the moment we're permitted. And so even if there was a mine today, of the equivalent of Arrow, and as I said before, the world needs two to three Arrows, and that is immediately, like today. If there was another one discovered, it wouldn't be until like 2040 that we'd see the first production. So the investment thesis for those on the call that are also interested in the spot price and exposure to the sector, it's incredibly compelling because nuclear power is absolutely fundamental to reliable, low cost provision of power. And low cost provision of power is so material to a healthy economy and population's average standard of living. It's incredibly compelling on so many facets.
Okay, so now that you're going through the process and you're getting close to at least finishing the regulatory review part, obviously there's still going to be regulatory impacts while you're building. Are there parts of that process do you see could be accelerated, or are there just things that have to be done and they just take a long time?
I think with respect to our project, it's so close to the end of it. Any acceleration is going to, not really impact the overall timeline. But with Prime Minister Carney coming in, he's identified, the need to accelerate the regulatory process. And, there are areas that could be more efficient. We went through a provincial Saskatchewan province permitting process, which was incredibly rigorous because the province takes responsibility for the mine environmentally. So it's very, very rigorous. And then that process is mirrored at the federal level. So there are efficiencies that the Prime Minister of Canada recognises could be implemented, and part of his Bill C-5 being introduced is directly aimed at that for major projects. I'm really pleased that governments have recognized that. President Trump has also recognized that and is accelerating approval for uranium projects in the US. And that is really reflecting the urgency around these projects that I mentioned earlier, that supply needs to increase dramatically and quickly in order to meet this demand that's coming. I'm all in favor in a more efficient regulatory process for everyone. And it's great news that that will be coming in Canada. But as I said earlier, I think we're so far advanced, and we've got the hearing date in 80 day, about 89 days from now. I don't think the impact of any of those efficiencies, they're going to occur after we're approved.
Of course, you said you've got more deposits to do, so maybe the efficiencies will help on your next time.
Yeah, no, totally.
So this is great. I'm excited for what you guys are doing. I'm really excited to hear that there's going to be a new source of uranium. Not so pleased with the fact it's going to take another 4 years. Sounds like there's a lot of construction work that needs to be done, and some things just take time. The additional pounds on the market will be useful by the time they get. Oh yeah, I know what I was going to ask you. How much power does your nice, fancy automated mine use?
Yeah, not a lot. As I said, you could fit our whole mining operation surface expression within, say, the Rogers Arena at Blue Jay Stadium, and that and the surrounding block. It's a very small footprint, so we don't use a lot of power at all. And whilst it's heavily automated, we're only moving the ore volume of about 1.5 double-decker buses a day. That's all.
Okay.
So it's actually a very tiny mine.
It's not a lot of mass and not a lot of movement.
Yeah, that's exactly. It's incredibly efficient from an impact perspective as well. And yet the output that the uranium will generate is incredible. Our annual production will produce enough power for the five most populous states in the US. That's the scale of what we're talking about with respect to our mine. Quite incredible.
The reason I ask is that some mines of all kinds of materials processing do require a lot of power. And I always like to ask uranium miners if they plan to use uranium as their power source.
Because of the location of our project, we'll be using gas generators plus a combination of wind and solar to power our mine, and that is the most efficient use. I've already mentioned the power that the uranium will generate, so we're well on the positive side of a net contribution. The other aspect is that it's entirely carbon free. And that amount of power is the equivalent of taking off 70 million vehicles off the road annually in terms of CO2 generation. So it has an incredible environmental positive as well at the same time relative to the other sources of power.
Yeah, this isn't a criticism of what you're planning to use. It just falls back to an era in my career when I was helping to buy software for the US Navy. And we always asked the people that were trying to sell us software, do you use your own product? We asked them, of course, do you eat your own dog food? So our thought was, hey, if they're trying to sell us a product, if they don't use it themselves, it must not be a very good product.
Now there's the good news is the province of Saskatchewan is looking to deploy small modular reactors in the province post 2030, and we would very much be a strong advocate for one of those located in our region, also powering the local communities as well. So I think one day, very much the likelihood will be that the uranium out of the mine will be the one powering the small modular reactor, which also powers the mine, but also surrounding communities.
Terrific. Hey, Lee, I really appreciate your time. I'm going to offer you the opportunity to summarize. Do you have anything else you'd like to share with us and tell us about uranium mining, about NexGen in particular, or about your own philosophies of the importance of clean energy?
Yeah, thank you, Rod, and it's been my absolute privilege to speak on today's show. Provision of clean, safe, reliable power that's cost efficient is absolutely fundamental to any economy's, population and their average standard of living. So the provision of that power is absolutely critical for a healthy, happy planet. We are developing a mine which is going to be 22% to 25% of that world supply of the key component to deliver that energy. And we're doing it in a manner at NextGen, which is setting new standards, be it environmentally, socially, or technically. That's how we're judging ourselves as an organization. We have a phenomenal deposit, but it's in the ground. We are judging ourselves on how we extract it and optimally deliver that to the world's economies. For the listeners out there, it's an incredible good news story in the resources market. On many fronts. And there's a highly dedicated team at NextGen who is focused on delivering it as I've outlined. I'd encourage anyone to go on our website, nextgenenergy.ca, and take a few moments to have a look at some of the great things that the company's done, not just in the mining space, but also the social space with our scholarship programs, even going down to the dog fostering, but a wide variety of programs which are making such an positive impact to the local communities where we operate. With that, thank you, Rod, and the Atomic Podcast for having me today.
You're welcome. And I've been speaking with Lee Curyer, the CEO of NextGen Energy. And I also want to take the time right now to disclose that I have a small holding in NextGen because I've been excited about this story for a while. Perhaps after this show and after it's released and it's public, I'll buy some more. But
Hey,
this is
well,
not advice to anybody. I'm just telling you what I do. All right. Lee, thank you very much for your time and
thank you,
good
Rob.
luck. And I'll keep up with you guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Atomic Show. This is Rod Adams. I've been your host for The Atomic Show for more than 15 years. As a publisher of Atomic Insights, I've been speaking with experts in analyzing nuclear energy for more than three decades. About half a decade ago, it became clear that investing in advanced nuclear development could provide exceptional returns. Successful investors based in Silicon Valley agreed. While I'll continue to produce new content, Atomic Insights is now a part of Nucleation Capital, a venture capital fund that specializes in nuclear and nuclear-adjacent emerging companies. As a managing partner at Nucleation Capital, I'm expanding my access and digging even deeper into nuclear energy companies. My partners and I are working hard to select ventures with extraordinary promise of success. They're building the advanced nuclear sector and helping to expand our clean energy options. We're investing our own money in a diversified portfolio of ventures and enabling investors like many of you to take advantage of our diligence and selection processes. We use an established software platform that allows us to offer full-featured investment subscriptions starting as low as $5,000 per quarter. A four-quarter subscription will get you exposure to between four and eight ventures. We encourage longer subscriptions with greater diversification by offering a discount on our fees for 8 quarters or more. If you are an accredited investor who wants to learn more about how you can participate, please visit our website at nucleationcapital.com. That's nucleationcapital, all one word, .com. Our fund and all of the information you need to subscribe is available online. You can also subscribe to our newsletter, Nucleation Insights, and join our pro-nuclear investor network, where you get information about syndicated investments in selected companies. Limited partners in the fund get discounted access to syndicates, but they are open to other AngelList members. If you would like more information, we're happy to help. Please spread the word.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.